Ladies and gentlemen, we are live.
Good evening and welcome to the regularly scheduled meeting of the Planning Commission for the City of Morro Bay. Today is Tuesday, April 21st, 2020. It is 6:09 p.m. We are experiencing this meeting via Zoom, pursuant to Section 3 of Executive Order N-2920. The Planning Commission meeting will be conducted telephonically and through Zoom and broadcast live on cable channel 20. The number that you may call to participate live is 1-818-794-7004. That number again is 818-794-7004. The show is, I don't want to say hashtag 2607, but hashtag 2607. And the guest pin is hashtag 464192. Again, that show number is hashtag 2607. Guest pin is hashtag 464192. If you would like to speak under the general public comment period, please call that number. And our audiovisual folks will get you in to regularly scheduled public comment. With that, I will announce that Mr. Gerald Lohr is the chairperson. However, we are having some technical difficulties, so he'll be participating audio only, and I will be conducting the meeting. All right. Moving on to the
Bob, are you there?
Nope. Okay. Are we moving on? Moving on to the consent calendar. Item A1, current and advanced planning processing list.
Jesse, you have to establish a quorum first.
I'm sorry, I missed a few steps here. This is my first one. Sorry.
Yeah,
so,
no problem.
I will we do have a quorum. All five members are present. So we do have a quorum. I missed the Pledge of Allegiance. We don't have a flag, so I guess we'll skip that part, but we will secretly pledge our allegiance to the United States privately. And we will also have a moment of silence if we can for, I guess in this time, for whoever you feel that's necessary for. So if we could have a moment of silence. Okay, how'd I do, Scott? Any miss anything?
Now we have Planning Commissioner announcements.
That's right, Planning Commissioner announcements. Anybody? Michael?
I just wanted to call people's attention to the letter that some of our regional leaders put together for the governor to review about opening up the city with a safe means as soon as possible, and encourage people to review that and speak to the leaders as well as the governor so we can move ahead. And also thanks to all the people who are keeping the stores open and the trash picked up and the city running.
Hear, hear. Anybody else? Seeing none, we will move on. Do we open public comment now, Scott, or do we?
Yeah, this would be the regular public comment period, sure.
Okay, so if we can, Mr. Bob, do we have any public comment? Seeing none, we will continue on to...
I'm having trouble with the public comment, so I'll see if I can get it going.
Take your time.
I'm not able to get them through right now. There was just one in the queue, and I'm not able to get them through at the moment.
Just let us know if you're able to get them on later, and then we can, you know, go out of order and take public comment if we need to. We don't want to let anybody, you know, not have an opportunity if they're going to hang around.
Can I ask a question, though? We do see, if I open up my participants screen, I do see several people with phone identifications with a phone number. We don't know their name, nor would we want to disclose that number, but we aren't aware, I'm not aware of how we understand which public comment they might be wanting to participate in, if at all, via the phone. So I wonder if anybody knows how to manage that aspect. I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know. I don't see a mute, unmute.
Right. I don't either. I agree. I think we're just having trouble with that. So I guess we'll just have to let Bob let us know when we do have someone on the line, and we'll just have to go out of order, like Scott's saying, and just allow people to speak.
Caller, are you there? The applicant, Michael. Are the applicants. Several of them are.
Okay. Shall we move on? All right. I see a couple of heads nodding, so we'll move on to item A1, the consent calendar, current and advanced processing list. Do we have a motion?
I'll move to approve A1.
I'll second that.
We have a motion moved and seconded to accept item A1, the current and advanced processing list. Can we have a all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
So let's do a roll call vote on that.
Okay.
Commissioner Ingrafia?
Yes. Aye.
Commissioner Stewart?
Aye.
Commissioner Lucas?
Aye.
Commissioner Luer? Are you on the phone? Commissioner Barone?
Aye.
I think Jerry was just calling me. So so you can go ahead and go on to the presentation, and I'll call Jerry back.
Okay.
You can go on to the public hearings now.
Okay. To public hearings, item B1. I have a personal reason to recuse myself from item B1, so I will turn the meeting over to Commissioner Lucas.
Okay. The item B1 is conditional use permit CUP 19-10, request for a conditional use permit for a second story 459 square foot addition to an existing 968 square foot non-conforming single family.
Yeah, here's the deal.
Demolition of an existing detached shed structure and construction of a detached two-car garage with a car lift and 238 square feet of unconditioned workshop space above. So we'll start with the staff presentation. This is going to be Willow, I believe.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Good evening. I hope you're all staying safe and healthy at home. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen with you all so you will be able to get my PowerPoint. Although it does say that the host has disabled attendees screen sharing, so we may need to fix that before I can move on here. If you're there, Bob, and you can hear me. Sorry, everyone.
Yes, we're working on it.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, I'm not able to get it up right now. I have to give me a moment.
Okay.
I'm kind of happy you changed the agenda now.
Oh, man. I can just show the plans. No.
Since I'm relatively new at the Zoom, Willow, how did you know that AGP had you frozen for sharing screen sharing?
When I go to click share screen, I get like a pop-up notification and it tells me that the host disabled attendees sharing.
I was going to say, it's if we're all disabled, that'll be the nature of the way it works, I guess. It is part of the staff report has your presentation in it that was in the PDF. So,
okay.
Let me see if I can do it, and maybe you can tell me how to move it if it shows up.
I have made.
I'm disabled as well.
Okay. Yeah, I think that he'll unlock it for the whole meeting. The last time that we had done this, I think we made sure that it was working prior to going live. I think it's like a switch that you have to do in the meeting, but.
You have to change Willow's status. I think right now we're just like attendees or whatever at this, and that needs to make her co-host or something so she can actually have the ability to do the presentation.
If people at home wanted to see the presentation apart from the computer, it is included in the PDF for the agenda at the end of the drawings. So you could follow along that way if you don't have access to the screen.
Full disclosure, I did make some edits to the PowerPoint today when I was talking through it. So it may be slightly different than the version that you have at home. I just kind of cleaned it up as I was talking it out. So.
Okay, you should be up now.
Okay. Willow. Yeah, it's working. So I'm going to go ahead and share this with you all. Let me know that you see it. Mm-hmm. Okay, perfect. Okay, thank you everyone for your patience as we try to kind of work through these technical difficulties tonight. We appreciate you being here. So this first item on the agenda before you tonight is a request for a conditional use permit for an addition to a non-conforming residence, as well as demolition and reconstruction of the detached garage structure at 953 Pacific Street. The existing site is located in an R1 zone outside of the Coastal Commission appeals jurisdiction to the south of Balboa Street, north of Marina Street, east of Bay Avenue, and west of Kings Avenue. This is an image of the existing 1905 home as seen from Pacific Street. Due to its age, planning did request a historical evaluation be conducted, which determined that the home was not considered historically significant and therefore was exempt from further environmental review for this project. The proposed project is a 459 square foot addition to the existing 968 square foot home, which will include interior remodels as well as a second story bedroom addition. The new garage structure will meet the parking requirement by providing two covered and enclosed spaces by the use of a mechanical car lift inside of the garage. There will also be 238 square feet of unconditioned space above the lift intended for storage and workshop space for crafts or other at-home projects. The space is only accessible by ladder and is not intended to be habitable. This project is non-conforming with regards to the existing north side yard setback, although all proposed additions will meet the development standards of the R1 zone. The project was determined to meet all the required findings for a conditional use permit. I'll just go through them quickly. That the proposed additions are consistent with the general plan, local coastal plan, and zoning ordinance. The project will be required to obtain a valid building permit.
Connected as a host. Welcome, host. You are now in the host room and can manage your callers from the call-in studio web interface. Show recording is on.
I didn't know Zoom had a rave function there. That's pretty interesting.
Okay, I tried to mute myself. I was hoping that that would stop it, but it did not. So does it sound normal again, everyone? Okay, I'm gonna keep going and hope for the best. Thank you again for your continued patience. Okay, moving on. The project will be required to obtain a building permit prior to construction. The project will not impair the character of the residential zone in which it's located. Major reconstruction would be required to meet the side yard setback, and the project is consistent with the character of the residential neighborhood. Okay. this is an image that highlights the portions of the house that will change with the proposed project. I will discuss these building heights in the next coming slides. So I believe these are the things that have changed since the PowerPoint was uploaded as a PDF. The average natural grade information was recalculated using a topographical survey. So the new high and low points of the building footprint are highlighted here, but the proposed residence height is still at the 24 foot, which is under the 25 foot maximum. And those calculations are there for you on the screen. Also calculated here for the garage, which is proposed at 24.68 feet. I will also add that this project is conditioned to require a height certificate during the building permit process prior to issuance of a building permit. This image is provided by the architect. It is photo simulation of what the proposed project would look like from Pacific Street. The project as designed will meet the residential design guidelines for relationship to existing homes, scale and mass, surface articulation, building orientation, garage and driveway design, building materials, and architectural elements. With all that said, it is staff's recommendation that the Planning Commission adopt Resolution 0920 that includes the findings and conditions of approval for CUP 1910 for the proposed development at 953 Pacific Street. Thank you.
Okay, so I'll ask the commissioners if they have any questions for staff. No? No questions?
Not for me, no.
Okay. Do we know if Jerry has any? Is he calling in at all? Susan, do you have any questions?
No, not at this point. Thanks.
Jesse, do you have questions?
Jesse had to recuse.
Oh, that's right. Jesse's left the room. That's right. I'm sorry. Well, have we looked at the viability of the proposed scheme with the ladder access, given the upper level nature of the parking garage? I guess what I'm concerned about is it's more of a comment at this point. Maybe I'll try to make it a question. The elaborate nature of the upper level so-called craft area accessed by only a ladder. Are we sure that that's something the building permit department is going to accept? Did they screen this at all?
Yeah, so it was routed to all departments. It did get the sign off from the building and fire and public works departments. We actually went back and forth a couple times trying to kind of finalize a design that would work for the applicants, as well as meet the codes. And this is kind of what we came up with, but hopefully the architect is here and he can answer any better questions about the specific design. Yeah.
We'll hold off until we have some other questions. So Susan, you had a question.
Sorry.
Was wondering, and also on the garage and that second floor, I noticed that it looked like the house redevelopment was requiring sprinklers. Is it required in the garage, especially given the storage area above the garage space? And if it is a craft area, what might be stored there? It seems like that would be kind of important.
Right. To my knowledge.
Yes, they're required to have it sprinkled.
Okay, cool. That was my thought.
Okay, so if I don't see any more questions, we'll open public comment and ask the applicants to share their thinking on this. So if you want to go, I'm seeing a name identified on the screen that I saw associated with the names on the project. So I don't want to disclose that necessarily, but do you want to go ahead and speak to the proposal?
Yes. Hi. Thank you.
Okay.
Anything specific that I can help with?
If you can just identify yourself and what your role is.
Yes, I'm Nick Houston. I'm a local designer here in Morro Bay, helping the client with this project. And we've been working with the city for a while to get it dialed in, and hope it suits everything for the purposes of this meeting. And I want to be available for any questions, any specific questions or motivations for why we did what we did. I'm happy to answer anything.
And the clients, do you wish to speak on this?
I'm going to end the show.
Sure. Hi, I'm Andrea Angelucci. This is my husband.
Hi, I'm Neil.
And we're working with Nick for this project.
We appreciate all the work that Nick has put into this, and also the city. And thank you, Willow, and thank you for considering this.
Okay, great. At this point, I'll ask AGP and Bob, do you have any people calling in for comment?
Yes, sir. We do have one. I'll see if I can get them on.
Okay.
Hello, caller.
Yes, hello. Yes, can you hear me?
Yes. Would you care to identify yourself, please?
Yes, I'm the neighbor in the back of the residence. And I'm just curious about two things. Number one, first of all, I don't want to encumber our neighbors with any unnecessary changes in their plans. I have absolutely nothing against their proposed addition. The only thing I'm concerned about is when I bought this property, I was under the assumption that it was a zero setback lot. And my property is located directly in back of theirs. And I'm just curious as to will the existing plan allow me access to my property in the event of repairs that might be required from time to time? For example, painting or repairing the exterior or such things as that. And if that's the case, I have absolutely no concern whatsoever or objection to this project.
Okay, that's great. We'll keep that in the queue. Do we have anybody else, AGP?
No, sir. Nobody else in the queue.
Okay, at this point, I'll close public comment. And Willow or Scott, do you want to address the caller's concern?
Willow, you're muted.
Yes, yeah. Sorry about that. So It's not a zero setback zone. It's an R1 zone, so it's based on a percentage of the length of the lot. I believe the required setback for living structures is 10 feet if it's at the maximum, and 5 feet at the minimum, or 6 feet at the minimum. And the garage structure is actually only required to be 1 foot away from the rear and side property lines. But due to issues with the foundation, the soils engineer actually recommended 3 feet so that we could get all the support we needed for that garage structure. So I can't speak to the structures on the adjacent site, whether or not they are meeting those setback requirements for those for that property, but the proposed project will be meeting the setbacks for theirs. I hope that helps.
I mean, there is 3 feet of, there's a 3 foot setback on the subject property to the rear property line. So assuming they could work out something with the owner to go back there to paint the back of their structure, I would imagine that's enough room to make that happen.
And I know that we have some areas where there are zero setbacks, and I was trying to remember, it is a 1 foot setback for the garage. It's not a zero line for the residential. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll close public comment and then open it up for discussion. Any of the commissioners care to speak? Susan, I see you raising your hand.
Trying to be good. I like the house design a lot. I think it's consistent with what's there. The garage design has me a little puzzled. It seems really tall. I wonder if the second floor is full height. It looks, like the height of a regular second story of a house. It certainly has windows all around and a deck. So I wondered if that was for aesthetic reasons to make it look like a living structure, but it's not going to be one, or if there really are plans to use that upstairs as a space that is more than just storage.
I'll open public comment up for the purpose of the clients or the designer to speak to that issue.
Okay. Yes, I can speak about it. Mainly they wanted to preserve their backyard because it's a pretty small lot. So we wanted to go vertical. And also some of those windows are false. They're shutters to look like windows, closed windows. And with the lift, we had to go high. And the effect is to make it look cute, like it's livable, even though it's kind of a functional garage and workshop above. It's mostly for looks and function. And we wanted to tie it in with the existing home as much as possible.
Thank you.
Okay, Joseph.
And that was essentially my question too. I noticed what looked to me like two fairly large sliding doors on the ground floor. I was assuming they were functional. And so I just wondered if there was some plan for the structure in the future other than as a car storage on that first floor. Am I correct? Are those sliding glass doors on the first floor?
Yes. Or I believe they're French doors. Yeah, into the yard. And that's for aesthetics and for access and upstairs as well. If someone is working up there, you get, of course, a beautiful view of Morro Rock and the sunset. So,
And likewise, by the way, I thought it was very impressive design. I like it very much.
Well, I got to give credit to the clients for having good taste. I appreciate that.
Yeah, similarly, I want to acknowledge the care that went into the addition, because it is a quite a nice existing home. And then I think the nature of what's been done is quite good. The one question, I'll be quite honest, we've got these laws in the state now that allow us to convert garages into small homes. And I guess this is a question for Scott and Willow, is we don't have any ability to change that, right? When we see this kind of condition coming in, it's within their rights to turn that almost immediately into a second residence, is it not?
It's the nature of the laws that are in place currently. Jerry Lohr, chair of the Planning Commission, asked the same question of me yesterday. I ran it through the city attorney's office. My thought was, we don't have, there's nothing we can really do. He was talking about adding a condition to it that said it couldn't be converted to an ADU, potentially. And I ran it by the city attorney and said, no, you can't do that. The way the law is written, it would, like you said, Commissioner Lucas, it would allow them to immediately turn around and convert the whole garage if they wanted to an ADU. Just the nature of, state law as it is today.
Yeah, I don't want to. I don't want to take any rights away from people, and I don't necessarily disagree with that. Wouldn't be a great small unit, and in this particular case, there is quite a bit of capacity to park on the site. So I think there that is accommodated as well, and I do think if we see some of our neighbors who have chosen to urbanize some of their suburban areas with higher density. I think this is a very nice higher density scheme. So I just wanted to know that we don't have any need to state intent when something like a right is involved. But and Willow, you have verified that the building folks are okay with the lift for the parking. And they are not concerned about the level of occupation with the craft room with the 3-foot setback. That doesn't kick it into the 5-foot setback area.
It's unconditioned space and not intended to be habitable. So, yeah, it does meet that because it's an accessory structure.
Yeah. That's the one thing I would say is in a conversion, we would be moving it into a habitable dwelling. And that would suggest that the setbacks aren't quite right for the code, but it also suggests that there might be building issues associated with that too. But I'll leave that for the code examiners. That's not part of what we're here to do. My understanding is we had no comment from the general public aside from our caller on the project. There was no public comment submitted by neighbors or anything else except for our caller and the is that right?
There was one, I believe it was done by the same caller. I believe it was posted to the website on Monday.
Okay. Well, then I'll look to my colleagues to see if we have any comments. Susan or Joseph, do you have anything else to say?
I like the creativity of stacking the cars, doing the car lift this way. And I really appreciate a family who appreciates their yard. Mm-hmm. So conserving that and keeping the integrity of this sweet little home.
Joseph, any final comments?
No, not really, other than to say, again, I just appreciate the design, particularly the exterior design of the house. I like that very much.
If I look at my Brady Bunch-like screen here, I'm not seeing Commissioner Lohr as a contestant here at this point. He's left the house, apparently. So there are the three of us on this one. So I'll ask Joseph or Susan if they would like to make a motion on this.
Oh, sure. I move that we adopt resolution PC 09-20 with respect to conditional use permit 19-10.
That sounds good. Susan, do you want to
second? I'll second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. So Willow, would you call the roll, please?
Yes, I will. Commissioner Ingraffia?
Yes.
Commissioner Stewart?
Yes.
Commissioner Lucas?
Yes.
Okay, motion passes 3-0.
Very good. And I'll see if Commissioner Barone is in the house and he's back. All right, I'll turn it back to you, Jesse.
just for complete transparency here, and you know, we're living in a new world. I just want to make sure everybody knows that I didn't physically leave my room, but I was hands off and didn't speak or interject in any way. So, for clarity. Okay, are you ready to move on to item B2, Ms. Nancy?
Yes. Let me see if I can share the screen.
First, do we have any ex parte communication?
Yes.
Susan?
Yes, I had a conversation with Mr. Cleath.
No, I didn't. No.
I also had a conversation with Mr. Cleath on, via telephone. Sorry. Almost went to Spanish there.
And I'll say I was contacted, but I was unable to meet.
The presentation. Oh, and my password. How nice is this? Okay, everyone can see this? Anyone? Yes?
We can see it. Yeah.
Yes.
So this is a public hearing to consider a conditional use permit and coastal development permit for 2790 Main Street, and the proposal is a small hotel. The site is 9,103 square feet. It's currently used for produce business in existing building. The existing building was built in about 1962 and was originally an office building for a builder and a real estate business. The existing building does not meet the criteria as a historic resource. The site is MCR R4, North Main Specific Plan Area, which allows commercial uses, including hotels and motels with a conditional use permit. It is also in land use area 3, Delmar Plain area, which allows a mixture of all uses as appropriate on a parcel by parcel evaluation. This is a rendering of the proposed hotel. It is in, as I mentioned, North Main Street area specific plan, area B, which provides for additional consideration of building height, roofline variation, street trees, and street frontage improvements. And this is the project site plan that shows towards Main Street and the corner of San Joaquin Street. The hotel building is an L-shaped building with 8 hotel rooms, has 1 fully accessible room, has a lobby and a dining room, outdoor seating area, kitchen, storage, and laundry. Parking provided is 9 spaces, including 1 van accessible, 2 compact, 2 EV charging spaces, and 4 standard spaces. The project floor plan, the ground floor has towards the north guest areas and back of house areas, and to the west hotel rooms, including a fully accessible room. And the second floor is all hotel rooms, and the one on the north is a honeymoon suite or a larger unit. This is an elevation of the north, which shows the main pedestrian entryway. This is the east elevation, which is Alder Avenue, and this is the parking lot access. And this is a building section from Main Street on the west side, which kind of shows how the units are laid out on the two-story configuration. And also shows the location of the solar panels and the condenser, which is hidden by the peaks of the two other roofs. The south elevation, which also has the solar panels, and this is adjacent to a neighboring two-story commercial building. This again is the rendering, and this shows the materials that are proposed to be used on the finished product. And this is the city development standards, where this project is meeting or exceeding all of the requirements, including the 25-foot height. It is below in lot coverage, and it is providing more parking spaces than are required. And staff recommendation is for approval of conditional use permit CUP 19-17 and coastal development permit CDP 19-044 pursuant to the findings and conditions of approval included in Planning Commission Resolution 08-20.
Thank you very much, Nancy.
You're welcome.
Any questions for staff?
Yeah, I have a question. I'm also trying to get the change the view here. Oh, well, it doesn't matter. I can't see myself, but that's okay. There I go. Am I correct in thinking in this instance the undergrounding of the telephone and electrical wires is required?
It is not required. It is required on site. It is not required off site because of the size of the parcel.
Oh, okay. That was my question.
Okay, seeing no more, if I can ask a question. Oh, Jerry's got a question. Jerry's back with us.
Yeah, am I coming through now?
Yes.
Okay. Technical difficulties, I'm sorry. And I was just wondering if the street trees are required on San Jacinto and Alder Street or just on Main Street.
I believe that they are just on Main Street, but they did work through that with Public Works and have the final agreed upon street tree arrangement in the landscape plan.
Okay. And are those street tree wells going to be irrigated from the applicant, or are they unirrigated as most of our other wells are?
I would have to look at the planning conditions.
Okay.
Or the public works conditions.
I had a question if everybody else is done. The EV chargers, are those going to be actual chargers, or are those going to be just the conduits as required by Calgreen?
When the applicant speaks, they can comment on that, but I think they're actual EV chargers that are available to two different spaces.
Okay. Seems like we have our chair back. Should we relinquish the control of the meeting back to the chair?
I'm not sure how long my connection's going to last. So, I'd be willing to set second seat on this one if you're doing okay, Jesse.
You got it, sir. We'll roll right along. Okay. Well, let's open public comment. Bob, do we have anybody?
No, sir. There is nobody in the queue.
Okay. Would the applicant like to speak to this item?
I would. I have maybe about 6 minutes of presentation, if that's okay.
I think that's
yes,
fine.
Sir. Yes, sir. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. Okay. So, I have some presentation graphics on PowerPoint, and I would like to share them if I could. Is there a possibility of doing that? Here we go. Share screen.
Bob, is that a possibility?
No, he should be able to share screen.
Okay.
Okay, well, let's see if I've got it. Share. Okay, here we go. Okay, and let's go to from the beginning. And I'll just get started. Thank you, commissioners, for giving me an opportunity to present our project, Rhapsody in View Hotel at 2790 North Main Street. Nancy Hubbard and the city staff have been helpful with guidance and input into the design and planning criteria for Rhapsody in View. Their recommendation to approve the project is appreciated, and the conditions attached are acceptable. Chris Parker, a local architect, has incorporated these into the proposed project, replacing an aged real estate sales office with an attractive hotel. My wife, Allie, and I know that this inn will be an asset to the community, more than just some extra revenue for the city. My son and daughter-in-law, Bobby and Kezia, as hosts of the inn, will provide a spark of light in the neighborhood. You can see right now, this is the way it looks on aerial. You can see the topography. It's a very gently sloping area, very easy to deal with and no major constraints. And then when we add the buildings on, you can see how it lays out with the streets. And I'll go ahead and discuss some of the different features that hopefully won't be too repetitive. The 8-room hotel will be modern, adaptable, environmentally sensitive, and designed with the conveniences and comfort of our guests in mind. The parking lot, not visible from Highway 1, has the two EV charging stations, and those will be installed. I'm not sure exactly which the product will have, but they will be installed. It also has the van space, which is immediately adjacent to the ADA room, so it's very easily accessed. The dining area will serve also as a living room with a fireplace, so that we will be able to take the tables out, put them away, and have this as more of a social area to congregate in. The kitchen will have full cooking and baking capabilities and has a second room for storage and food prep. There are three rooms downstairs, the ADA room, which has a patio, and two standard hotel rooms. There is an outside shower for the beach-going guests. Upstairs, the three larger rooms will all have vaulted ceilings and balcony decks. The honeymoon suite will have a fireplace, mini kitchen, clawfoot bathtub, and a private bedroom. So as we talk about those features, I'd like to paint you a picture of what a guest will experience in Rhapsody in View. When a guest comes to Morro Bay, they come for the cool weather and the clean ocean breeze to enjoy the scenic views, walk on the beach, go for a bike ride. They'll dine at freshly caught fish at Dockside or Mexican food at Lolo's or Taco Temple right nearby, and perhaps purchase produce from the Avocado Shack where they relocate. They may come to see their sons and daughters at Cal Poly or maybe just to get away from the inland heat. And as they reach the coast, they'll see the majestic Morro Rock during the day, or as I experienced when I was a kid, the red flashing lights on the iconic Three Stacks at night. Rhapsody in View will be their home away from home, a strategic place to hang their hats as they explore the Central Coast from Madonna Inn to Hearst Castle along Highway 1 and the beach, a short three blocks away. In a minute, they pull into Rhapsody in View and come through the stone-framed entrance and are welcomed with a cup of hot coffee or hot chocolate, a slice of almond tort, strawberry rhubarb pie, or macaron. These are some of our family specialties. They can settle down in front of the fireplace and listen to classical big band, musicals, or Gilbert and Sullivan tunes, sometimes played or sung by the hosts, Kezia and Bobby, and their friends. Their room is spacious, fastidiously clean, with warm lighting to fit the situation, insulated from outside noise, a cozy bed awaiting. The view is always available from inside or on the balcony or patio, a gorgeous sunset, the white water surf, the soaring peregrine falcons, gulls, and pelicans. And after a restful sleep, the breakfast is ready with fresh fruit, fresh baked scones, bacon and eggs, and coffee and juice. They can sit in the tranquil garden if they like. We'll have bicycles available to ride on the bike path and outdoor showers to clean off the ocean salts for the beachcombers and surfers. My son, Bobby Cleath, is a certified massage therapist, and perhaps he can relax their weary muscles and joints. This is the Rhapsody in View experience, aimed at physical and spiritual restoration, bringing peace and joy to each guest. So you can see a lot of thought has gone into the design and planning for this special place. We don't know what the future holds with the current isolating measures forever changing the way we live. But we do know that each of us needs a place to rest and a place to recreate. The Cleath family asks that you support our effort to provide such a place with your approval of this project as it is conditioned. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cleath. So public comment is still open. Bob, can you let us know if we have anybody else that wishes to speak to this item?
No, sir. There is nobody else in the queue.
Okay. Seeing none, Mr. Parker, would you like to comment on this?
I'll just mention I'm here, Chris Parker, architect on the project. I'm here to answer questions if you have some.
Very good, sir. Okay. Seeing that no public comment, we will close public comment, bring it back to the commission. And does anybody have any questions for the applicant or for staff? Michael?
Yeah, I just had a question. With the number of rooms up above and the continuous balcony, I'm not seeing any provision for privacy or division up there. Are you anticipating it remaining open along the entire length as it's shown?
Are you asking me? The answer is yes. There will be a privacy. Certainly, we wouldn't want one person looking in the other guy's window. So yes.
It just makes it without seeing that it because it's the Route 1 side. That's the side I think everybody would be most concerned about the impact of having additional architectural features. You know, I think Chris has done a nice job with the details of the screens and things, the awnings, the little trellis work over the upper windows. And down below, so that gives it a nice sense of detail. But that would be something I would say we'd have to have staff review that. So that I'm a little concerned if it gets above rail height and starts to get up into the view area 6 or 7 feet tall, you're starting to put an element on the outside facade that we're not able to see with this. But that's the only question I had. I have some other comments when we get around to that.
All right. Anybody else? Questions? I had one for, I'm sorry, Jerry, go ahead.
On the EV chargers, are those level 2 or level 3?
I think it's going to be the lower cost one.
Okay. So those will be level 2. Will they be available to the public or just to the guests?
At this point, it would be just to the guests, yes.
Okay.
You know, part of the problem would be if for the public, if they use it, then they wouldn't be accessible to the guests. And they're right. Also in guest parking spaces, and they would take up the space if it couldn't happen.
Right. And I think it's a great feature. It's something that's going to be required, you know, almost obligatory in the near future. So I think you're wise to put them in now. Because I think there'll be people will be looking for that to determine where they're going to stay.
Right. Okay. I had the same question as Michael and Jerry. So let me see if I had any more questions. I don't believe I did. There isn't an elevator in this, right, Chris?
No, at this point we're designing it without an elevator, keeping that ADA unit down on the main floor and giving it a balcony to alleviate that.
Okay, I think that's all I have. So if there's nothing else, I'll close public comment. And I think I already did, but I'll close it again. And so we'll start with commissioner comments. Who wants to go first?
Oh, well. I'll just second Commissioner Lucas's comment about, you know, the possible addition of something on those front balconies that's simply not visible now. And the more it hadn't occurred to me before Michael mentioned it, but, you know, hard pressed to approve a design when we can't see all of the significant design. That's my thought.
When I was looking at it, I'm looking at the upper floor plan on A2.1. It shows, the floor plan shows a wall type structure there. I guess it just doesn't show up on the elevation though. So.
Right.
Chris?
Unmute yourself. There we go.
I just want to mention, I initially did not intend an actual partition there, just the separation between the units. If Tim is looking to do a partition, I would suggest something that's probably just frosted, glass related, like a windscreen partition, and whether if you guys would be in favor of that, if that was something he'd want to do, and if it would be something that we could present to Scott to check out if that's the case.
Okay, well, we'll bring it back to the commission, and then we'll discuss and get back to you on that. Does anybody else have comments? Jerry?
I'd just like to say that I had a conversation with the applicant, and so just for ex parte communication on that.
Real good. Anybody else wish to speak to this, Michael?
I just want to say that it seems to have a similar size and mass to the building next door, but I think it's distributed on the site in such a way that the common side yard setback will mean you've actually got a gap there instead of a continuous street facade. So the people behind will have a break in the North Main facade there. And also there's some restraint in how deep the building goes on the site, so that there's going to be considerable views from behind down the streetway that the northeast corner is not built upon with upper level structures. So I think we'll have some pretty good view penetration through a totally built site at this point on the building. And I think it's got a kind of articulation that we've seen down on the waterfront with some of the buildings down there. And I'm fine letting staff take a look at the division, and I'm fine with some type of thing that's lighter, like the glass that was discussed by the architect. So I think it's pretty good. My only concern is I walk in that area sometimes, and I know we've got a lot of smaller hotels there. And the one thing I would say is that back street, forget Alder. I appreciate the corner landscape articulation. I'm wondering if we wouldn't want to see street tree in the parking, maybe framing the parking lot entrance on Alder, not at the corner where I think it might block a view out, but at the maybe framing each side of the street access on Alder, where we might soften the impact of the parking lot on Alder Street.
I think in general, Public Works doesn't really want street trees in the public right of way. So it probably would be more maybe an enhancement of the landscape plan.
Okay. Susan, did you have anything?
Just that I think it's a really thoughtful project. Seems to fit that neighborhood really well. I like all the landscaping that they've thought about, and I like how they're thinking about this as a family-friendly and family-run business. I think it's a good addition to the community. I like it.
Jerry?
Yeah, I agree with the comments. I would like to see a little bit, you know, like Michael, I'd like to see a little bit more framing and a little bit more shading of the parking lot, if at all possible. But I think it's a really restrained project, and I could see it as a great place to have a wedding party and have a grouping come and stay as a, you know, to take the whole site and have a destination wedding for Morro Bay. Or wedding anniversary or something of, you know, an occasion like that. So I think they did a good job. And, other than the, you know, a little bit more on the landscape and a little bit more shading on the parking lot, I think it was well done.
All right. Interesting some comments here. Also, I agree. I think that the project's very well done, very well thought out. I don't know if I could have imagined a better use for this parcel than what they've created here, the applicants. And I think they did a great job in both maximizing the site, maximizing the viewshed, maximizing the aesthetics. I think they did an outstanding job. So those are my thoughts. All right. Well, since it sounds like we're all kind of leaning in the same direction, do I hear anybody with a motion? Susan.
I move to approve resolution number PC08-20, a resolution of the Morro Bay Planning Commission approving conditional use permit CUP19-17 and coastal development permit CDP19-044 for a new mixed-use project at 2790 Main Street.
Okay, do I hear a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Nancy, can we get a roll call, please?
Commissioner Lucas.
Aye.
Commissioner Stewart.
Aye.
Commissioner Barone.
Aye.
Commissioner Ngrafia.
Aye.
Chair Lohr.
Yes.
Okay, we have 5 in favor.
All right.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, thank you.
So let me scroll down here to item B3. And that's going to be Nancy, so we'll just hand it off, and I'll scroll
right.
And scroll.
See if I can do this a little smoother this time. All right, everyone can see the presentation?
Yes.
All right. This is an application for coastal development permit for 3029 Beachcomber, which is one of the last vacant parcels. It's an infill site on the west side of Beachcomber. This is a view of the site. It was reconfigured with the neighboring parcel probably in the 60s or 70s to create 2 kind of reverse L-shaped parcels. The site is 6,060 square feet. It's zoned R1 S2A, and it borders the coastal dune, and it has an ocean view. So there was a document recorded December 2019, and that was just a confirmation of the lot lines, as the architect has told me. So the original lot split was done in the 60s, 70s. But this shows you an overview of how the lots will work together. The biological studies required were environmentally sensitive habitat area boundary determination, biological resources survey report, and a Morro shoulder band snail habitat assessment report. All 3 were done by Ecological Asset Management in March 2020. The conclusion was, as shown on this map, this is mapping the ESH boundary, and the requirement is that the development be 50 feet away. And as you can see, it is 74 to 69. feet away. It determined that the ESH setback limits were what's shown on the map. There were no evidence of live Morro shoulder band snail or empty shells. The existing vegetation and soil conditions are not conducive to the Morro shoulder band snail, and no additional studies were required. Sea level rising analysis, the property is not a high risk. At the highest risk level, which is 10 feet. So this is one of the mapping system that is approved by California Coastal Commission for mapping the effects of sea level rising. And in this case, it is not a high risk, and no avoidance strategies or design changes are necessary. The proposed new home is 2,078 square feet of livable area with a 713 square foot garage. They are proposing permeable pavers in the driveway, solar array on the south facing roof slope, and a smooth stucco finish with garage doors fence and fascia boards in wood, and the material boards shown at the bottom of the photo. The site layout and the development standards, this shows how the site is laid out on the site, and it is in compliance with all of the development standards. And as you can see, the site in the narrow portion, the long portion, is very narrow, which affects the design somewhat. So development standards, the project is meeting or I don't want to say exceeding in the height because they're less, but they're meeting all of the standards. And it is situated on the parcel, similar to other homes on narrow parcels to the south and the subject property. So the design, if we can go back and look a little bit at this, is because of the narrow size of the lots, the garages take up about 50% or more of the parcel. And then many of the homes have this kind of open courtyard entryway, because the entryways, because of the narrowness of the lot, have to be on the side of the homes. So there are 6 to 8 homes with this specific kind of courtyard entry design on this section of the block. This is the proposed floor plan, which shows the 2-car garage closest to the street. Behind that is laundry and storage. 2 bedrooms, 1 bath towards the front, and then towards the back is the entry living and kitchen area and a master bedroom and a bathroom with a deck off the back. This is the street frontage view, and this kind of shows the adjacent homes, how they're similar in design with kind of a facade of garage home in courtyard entryway or fenced yard facing the street. The lower view is from the west, so this is what you would see from the beach. This is the north view that faces the neighboring property that shares the other half of the L-shaped lot, and the view of the south-facing side. This is a view of the street, and again, I just wanted to point out kind of how the homes are very similar. They're at about the same setback from the street, and most of them are primarily garage because of the narrowness of the lots, and then recessed courtyards that get them to the entryway. This is a view of photos of the lots, the adjacent neighbors, and you can see because the lots are narrow, the homes meet the setback requirement, the new home meets the setback requirement, but they are tight, and this is how the neighbors have kind of addressed the privacy issues with block walls and landscaping and trellising. And staff recommends the Planning Commission approve Coastal Development Permit CDP 19-045 by adopting Planning Commission Resolution 07-20. Which includes the findings and conditions of approval for the project.
Thank you, Nancy. Does anybody have questions for staff? Jerry?
Nancy, on the previous project that came before us on the adjoining lot, I believe there was some utility. There was a utility easement, or there were utilities across the dogleg section of this lot from the street to the adjoining lot on the north. Have those been removed, or are they still there?
I'm not aware of utilities on this lot. There looked like a narrow utility easement across the driveway of the adjacent parcel.
Okay, this is from memory from a few years back, but I think there was a gas line and a water line that went across that L-shaped section on the right. So maybe we can have the applicant address that.
Okay. The neighboring house did an addition in 2014. So that might be what you're remembering.
Okay.
I had a question for Nancy. I know you discussed the sea level rise, but if I'm not mistaken, in the new general plan, we're saying that the city has no intention of armoring or supporting any kind of advanced groundwork to stop it.
That's correct.
So is that something that all of the people are aware of? I didn't see any attempt here to raise the structure at any significant amount or things.
It wasn't necessary because it didn't meet the standards for a high risk.
Okay, that was my only question.
I have a question on that topic. So in the file, there is this report sponsored by the city that says essentially house at that elevation is not in danger of sea level rise. Am I correct in my understanding of that, Nancy?
The city did do an overall survey of sea level rise risk. Yes.
So my only thought is, it seems like every other day, we're finding about instances where these expert opinions are turned out to be, much too conservative, and things that we thought were not a risk, in fact, are turning out to be a risk. So I just wonder, and I guess this is probably less of a question, I'm sorry, maybe it's for later on, but I wonder if there should be some sort of provision in this proposal, in this approval that says in every sense, the city should be held harmless should this report turn out to be less than superbly accurate, meaning it's our best guess, but don't come back and sue us if it turns out to be inaccurate. That's my thought.
That sounds like a legal question.
Well, it is. I mean, I'm not expecting you really to answer it, but it is a concern of mine that, in the event of a major climactic disaster, people are going to be looking around every place in order to somehow, recover some of the cost and make us whole. And I'd like to try and protect the city if I could. Just a thought.
Yeah, and I don't want to interject here, but I do know that flood and things of flood insurance is all dealt with federally through FEMA. I think it would be more of a global problem dealt with either federally or even on a global.
What I'm getting at is, though, I mean, if the city through its representative makes a statement that the property is not in danger, I mean.
I don't think that's what we said. What we said is based on the science with the data provided and recommended by California Coastal Commission, it determines that this site is not at a high risk category.
Okay.
So Nancy, on this, I'm sorry, I didn't see it in the planning conditions. Do we have a statement in there that makes the applicant aware that it would be highly unlikely for them to be able to armor this property if it was necessary in the future, armor the coastline, or because I could see that coming up in the next 25, 30 years.
Scott, do you want to take this one? The California Coastal Commission doesn't require that for properties that aren't in a high-risk area.
Yeah, and the studies that the city's done to this point don't substantiate. I mean, it substantiates that sea level is not going to rise enough in this area to have any impact over the next 100 years.
Yeah.
So I mean, you're right. I mean, is that 100% correct? I mean, the further you get away from today or the day we did the study, the less accurate things get, right? I mean, that's just kind of the nature of the way it goes. I'll also speak to Commissioner Ingraffia's comment. The standard resolution has a required in it for them to hold us harmless related to the decision by this body. And that's standard condition 5. That's about as good as I can get as it relates to the, indemnification issue that Commissioner Gaddafi raised. We don't have anything that speaks directly to the sea level rise component of it. Because as Nancy said, there's not a requirement for that at this point.
Would we be prudent, Scott, to address that with a a more or less a statement in the planning documents?
A statement that would say
that this, you know, the studies have been done, but we just want to, you know, notify the applicant that it's their responsibility the requirements or the recommendations are for you could not armor this project in case it came up as a hazardous situation for sea level rise.
I mean, the text in the draft general plan, you know, says that you can't do armoring in these locations. So assuming at some point we adopt that document, then any proposal to do other than that would be a violation of it and wouldn't be allowed. Coastal Commission is also not approving armoring, you know, up and down the coast. And because we have our general plan, local coastal program, they put policies in there that say just what I said, that you wouldn't be able to do that. I think it's covered by the documents that we have and that the language that Coastal Status put in there.
Okay, but this is being approved prior to that document being adopted. So
it would be the document in place. You know, I mean, that would be the policies that are in place. You have policies in place now that say you can't do it. Sure. But they're more specific. There's more specific text in the draft general plan local coastal program.
Okay, so you think this is sufficient that we were covered?
I think we're good. I mean, you know, if anything happens, it's not going to be in the near term. You know, I mean, you're looking well over 50 years out. And we'll have policies in place that are stronger than we have now. We have policies in the current general plan, so you can't do it.
Okay.
All right, Michael. You're on mute. Michael, you want to unmute?
You got to unmute.
In the site plan C1, it's very clear that the applicant has a 4-foot setback from the rear property line. But it's also clear from that document that the neighbors have built things past that line in the past. So we're not establishing any right to do anything like that. There's no attempt at this point to exceed the lot line with anything that other people have done.
No, there was some conversation early on, and there's some question about the classification of what was added to the neighbor's house. There's documents in the file, but this applicant and the way it was designed is meeting the setbacks and not going into the OA zone to the west.
Okay, it's very clear. I walk down there quite a bit with my little 14-year-old Boston Terrier, and it's amazing to me how much material is out in that dunescape from the neighbors.
Good.
Okay.
So Nancy, on this, there's existing patios on both sides that are out into the dune areas. You know, I know that's it was a paper street at some point. Would this applicant be able to build a patio out past their?
No, as I just mentioned, we talked about that and determined that it isn't something that would be allowed. And so they've designed their project to fit within the property lines.
Okay. Okay. So a future addition of a patio out there, which is, I think, what happened on these other projects at a later date wouldn't be allowed.
That's correct.
Even a ground level.
Well, it's as you mentioned, other people are spilling out into that area, and I don't know if they came in for a permit or not, but I think it's questionable. And when the neighboring property added their deck, there was some conversation back and forth between Coastal Commission and the city about how they felt about that level of improvement and whether that was allowed or not allowed. So this applicant didn't push the envelope.
Should we condition the project to not allow that, or would you know, how can we prevent that in the future, or could we?
I don't know that you could. Some of the improvements that were put out there were approved by the city. There is a street. There's actually lots on the other side of the street that are out in the dunes. And I think, you know, the city engineer at the time made the decision that these properties, you know, had extended out to the center line of that paper street, and then therefore could put improvements in there that are allowed in that zone, which the determination was made that the decks at grade could go out there at one point in the past.
Okay, so what is the city's position now on that for this project?
Nancy, did you talk with Rob about that specifically?
Yes, I didn't get anything definitive, but it sounded like it wasn't something that currently would be approved.
That was my sort of take from the last time we had the conversation with the city engineer as well.
Okay, then let me ask, if typically if a patio is under 30 inches in height, that's not required to have a permit. So unless we condition the project, how do we state that they wouldn't be allowed to build that?
Well, I think that they'd be building outside of their property line.
What the building code actually says there is if it's over 200 square feet attached to a house serving an exit or over 30 inches. So there's a lot of caveats there. So they basically couldn't do it because it would be probably, even if it was structurally independent, it would be presumably serving an egress door.
Okay. So, okay.
And it'd be outside the property line, it sounds like.
So. Yeah, I'd just like to make sure that we don't have more, you know, more dune encroachment here by these properties. So.
Okay. So anybody else, Susan, did you have questions for Nancy? All right. So seeing none, Jerry, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. Did you have any more?
No, that's it. I have some comments further on that and discussion, but.
Okay. Very good. So we'll open public comment and ask the applicant if they would like to speak to the subject.
I do have somebody in the queue.
Hello. My name is Simon Hacker.
Let's let Mr. Hacker go first. He's the applicant, representing the applicant, I should say.
I'm a designer for Chrysler Design Construction, and I'm representing our client, Kelly Simmons, and her proposed Beachcomber residence. As you know, the project is a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, single-family residence attached 2-car garage, and it will currently infill the vacant lot located on 3029 Beachcomber. The residence was designed to fit into the lot's irregular shape and size while blending in with the neighborhood's existing architectural context. I believe the project will meet requirements based off of the city's staff report recommendation for approval. Thank you for the opportunity to present this project, and I look forward to answering any questions or concerns you might have.
Thank you. Okay, Bob, let's have your public comment speaker.
Hello?
Yes, you're on with the Planning Commission.
Hi, my name's Jack Randall. I just wanted to comment on the paper street. Back when the neighbor to the north did their addition, the city engineer, he concluded, and it was all documented in the meeting notes for that project in 2014, that because driftwood was never, I don't know the correct terminology, like given to the city, that he determined that the east side of driftwood is actually became the property of all these lots. And that is why the neighbor to the north was able to build his house out an additional 5 feet past where all the other houses were, and also add a deck in front of that. So although we So you get in that OA zone area, that 25 feet. So there's a 15 foot setback for, no, a 10 foot setback for the OA zone, which would be the center of driftwood. And the remaining 15 feet of OA, a structure like a deck that's lower than 30 inches from the ground would be allowed, is what the city engineer concluded and was documented in all the meeting minutes with the city.
Okay, is that it?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Bob, do we have anybody else?
No, sir, there's nobody in the queue.
Okay, seeing none, we'll close public comment and bring it back to the commission. Do the staff want to comment on the public comment?
Yes, I mean, that's the same thing that I found. That doesn't, it doesn't mean that it's consistent with the viewpoint currently.
Okay. Okay, so we'll close public comment and we'll bring it back to the commission. Anybody want to start with questions for the applicant?
I do have one. I'm sorry, I misstated before. The rear setback is shown as 5 feet. There's a 4 foot line there that I think is a roof overhang. But I was concerned about the north, where we have the narrow side yard setback. We have the bay window from the kitchen extending out a foot, and that's allowable, Nancy or Scott?
Yes, it is.
It is. Okay. That's all I have as a question. I have more comments.
Okay, Joseph?
You know, I recall reading a letter, and I believe it was the neighbor to the north who was commenting that the kitchen window of the applicant's plan was going to look into the privacy of his bedroom. Is that correct?
It's correct that I believe that you had a comment from the neighbor that said that. I don't think it's correct that that is factually correct, because there's a tall block wall and their bedroom is in the center of their house. So there's very little overlap between the kitchen window on the new design house and the neighbor's house. And the neighbor's wall looks to be about 6 feet tall in the vicinity of where their bedroom is.
Okay, so in your opinion, all or most of the view of the neighbor's bedroom is blocked by that wall, is that a fair conclusion?
Yes.
All right, anybody else have questions for the applicant? Jerry?
I have a kind of comment and a question at the same time here. The spandrel going across the front of the building, what to the designer, what is the purpose of that? And what was your design intent?
Mr. Hacker, are you available?
Could you repeat the what on?
Okay, the spandrel that's over the top of the courtyard. I've got a real concern with it, and I'm wondering why it's there.
Originally, it was a three-car garage, but due to lot coverage, we had to minimize. But we wanted to keep the design. Of the three openings with the gate.
Okay, could you do the same and remove the beam from the top and bring those columns down to basically a fence height, like almost every other property there on that street has?
I would say pretty much every one, including the neighbor directly to the south, has either a full height wall or a garage at that point. So it'd be kind of not in keeping with the current character.
Yeah, I drove that street several times and I disagree. Even the neighbor to the south has that full width garage, but then when it's past the garage, it drops down to to essentially to fence height, and almost every other house on that street either has articulation there with at least a 2 or 3 foot step back and is not containing that whole facade with basically framing the whole frontage view area with that. It seems pretty imposing to me.
Well, I mean, it's trying to create some privacy for the courtyard at the entrance and the garage there too.
At 10 feet high, I'm not sure how much privacy it allows. I don't know
The fence only goes 6 feet high, but then the spandrel is up above at the top of a flat roof height. So, I mean, it's
right.
Complete.
Right. I can see it at the garage. I can see it at the garage. It's just in that open courtyard. It seems to, seems to say, stay out, get out. We don't want you here. It doesn't seem like a very friendly building to me. And it doesn't seem, it seems like the articulation there is not consistent with most of the rest of the houses on that street, on that side of the street. So I was wondering if you had a special reason for it to be there.
The privacy and to maintain the rhythm of the front of the facade.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, anybody else have questions for the applicant? Seeing none, okay, we'll go ahead and close public comment again. Thank you, Mr. Hacker. We'll go into comments, commissioner comments. Does anybody want to go first? Jerry, do you want to lead us off?
See, as I'm halfway there already. So, basically it seems like an angry building to me. It seems like with that spandrel across the top, it's kind of a basically, I got mine, everybody else stay out. And I'm not sure, I think he can get the same feeling for the building by basically where that, if he cut the columns down to a little bit over fence height, he could keep as much privacy there from the street view and would make that whole facade a lot less imposing on the neighborhood. And that was my impression. And then driving down, I drove down that street several times and there isn't anybody there. The house to the south is the worst house on the street in that regard. And almost every other house either had setback articulation or it had, where beyond the garage, the facades dropped down to fence height. So that's my comment. That's what bothers me about this design.
Okay. Anybody want to go next?
Okay. I'll be happy to. Yeah. I'll friendly disagree with my colleague. I think the street render shows that the wall is pretty transparent. I think the fact that they've gone to the trouble of putting some light and doorways in the side yard in the garage itself makes it feel like that's a habited space. I think if it had been all enclosed walls and no articulation to the garage, I might agree that that's a very uninviting area, but I think it's kind of an interesting solution because you also have the open fence at the end that's looking down the entire length of the side yard. So you actually get transparency through the lot at a place where a lot of the other projects, you don't get any transparency through at all. So I think it's actually kind of an interesting way to play the front. And I do think it's very intimate. The drawings are very hard to convey the streetscapes down there. They're very tight, and this gives a sense, I think unfairly, of seeming like there's this large yard with the building way back there, and it's very tight. And I think it's an interesting solution. I think it's a very difficult site, and I think they've done a really good job of. I think the interiors on this are going to be very interesting for the owner. I am concerned, like I mentioned before. I understand that people are going to read documents about paper streets and things differently, but I think when we're in a mode here where we're appreciating the nature of what makes Morro Bay Morro Bay, that dunescape and the Esha that's there, we've got to protect that. And this, I'd be very much in favor of putting a condition on that says we don't want any movement into the so-called right-of-way back there, and maintain the Esha setback at this 60 plus to 70 plus feet that's indicated in the staff report. And I think that that's a real significant thing for me. I think it has a 50s kind of quality when I look at the side toward the ocean. I'm not sure how many people will actually see that. Perhaps they can, but I appreciate how understated it is. I would think if I was the designer and the owner, I would tend to get my elevation as high as possible. And they've actually shown some restraint here more than they need to be. And I think that's admirable.
Thank you, Michael. Joseph?
I think I agree with Michael in terms of safeguarding against expansion over time of that yard facing the Esha area. It's very difficult to police those sort of things, and I'd sort of like going into this that there's a clear understanding that that should not happen. And you know, with respect to the front, the facade of the building facing the street, I wish I had taken a little bit more interest and thought about that before the meeting. So now I have to sort of quickly form an opinion, and as usual, I'm sort of in the middle here, in that it does appear to me as a novice and a layman that it's fairly massive feeling to it, which to me doesn't strike one as particularly inviting. On the other hand, you can see through it, and I can imagine it as some sort of a front yard. That being the case, I can't say that it's too much uninviting, too much mass. So I probably would unhappily, but accept it. But I do think we should have some sort of safeguard to make sure that there isn't any more encroachment into the Esha.
Thank you, Joseph. Susan?
I don't know if I have anything to add. The facade doesn't bother me. I like the articulation with the wood in there. I can see what Jerry's saying about kind of the heaviness of the columns and the spandrel, new word for me. I feel like with so many of these projects, people come to us to get permits, and all of the conditions are written into these permits. And then we go forward assuming that they're going to do what they have agreed to do when everybody signed off on it. So is it possible that down the road these people are going to build a massive deck out into the Esha when nobody's looking? It's very possible because people do that. I think this project is conditioned the way it's conditioned, so it's already written into that. So I don't feel personally the need to add more because I feel like it's there. The lot shape kind of blows my mind. I really feel sorry for the neighbor to the north who is going to have the front of their building, a half to two thirds covered by this garage. And yet those were the sizes of the lot. So somebody way back when in all of their infinite wisdom decided that would be a great thing to do, make these strange L-shaped lots. So The one thing I'm always curious about is who this is being built for. You know, is it, is this somebody's dream house? Is this a spec house? Is this going to be a vacation rental? And I know that that's not really our purview to ask those questions, but for me, it makes a little bit of a difference. So I guess I fall more on Michael's side in terms of the architecture, and then in terms of protections for the ESHA or sea level rise, I think that's built into the process. So those would be my comments.
Okay, thank you, Susan. So my comments, I think I'm going to land somewhere near where Joseph landed. I tend to look at these things more analytically than aesthetically. I don't really have that artist eye, but I know what I like and I know what I don't like. And no offense, Simon, but I didn't like it when I saw it, the front elevation, and I couldn't really articulate why. But Jerry did a pretty good job of kind of, oh, that's why. It just doesn't seem necessary. That beam doesn't seem necessary to create that, that privacy. I think that's what, they're going for is, you still have this. I mean, we all live here. So everybody wants this front yard that they can hang out in and, you know, have some form of privacy, but, we really don't have privacy here. You know, everybody can see everybody. I can see in 9 different living rooms from my living room. So, I just don't know if I like the design. Do I like it so do I dislike it so much that I'll disapprove it? I don't know. I really liked the rear elevation. I really thought that I think that's where you guys concentrated your efforts. That looked to me like that's where the efforts were concentrated. And I really liked that rear elevation. I just didn't care for the front, and I couldn't say why, but Jerry hit it on the head. As far as that that patio, I think, kind of doing this for a living, you see neighborhood conformance kind of come into play where people just conform to what everybody else is doing. So if the folks to the north and the folks to the south have a patio that encroaches into the dunes, over time, I think these folks or whoever owns this home now or in the future will probably just follow suit, and no one will really have reason or cause for alarm because everybody else is doing it. Why shouldn't they be allowed to? And I don't want to comment on that and say that they should be or shouldn't be. But I just see over time, 10, 15, 20 years from now, more than likely that whole area will look similar. It will just conform to the neighborhood. And I don't know that that's bad or good. And, it's definitely encroaching over the property line. So obviously that's not ideal, but, paper lots and this, that, and the other. So anyway, I'm rambling now, but, those are my thoughts. So, if anybody else would like to speak about this further, or should we entertain a motion, or what does the commission think here? Jerry?
Okay. I didn't see a specific condition that said that they could or they couldn't encroach into that paper street. Did I miss something or so?
No, I don't think you missed anything because I don't usually condition properties to build that they can't build beyond their property.
Right. Right. But yeah, so if we wanted to put something in there specifically, we would need to condition the project to say that this is, we're aware of this and this, we're not shining a kind eye on it at this point in time.
Right. So you could say something like no conditions beyond property boundary in the OA zoned area.
Okay. So how do my fellow commissioners feel about that?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah, I feel very strongly that if it needs to be explicit, I think we have to stand up for the environmental sensitivities that have that balance out some of these former interpretations, because it is a different era and we have different appreciations of some of the natural habitats, especially the one that frames the ocean for us. I really think we'd need something in there.
Okay. Then Scott, do you have any recommendations for a condition on that?
I think Nancy has it. I think it's good to identify it by the zone area. You know, they can't extend any improvements into the open space area. I think that makes sense to me.
I agree. I don't know what everybody else thinks, but I can go for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we'll write it like the applicant shall be prohibited from extending improvements into the EOA area.
Okay, I don't feel strongly one way or the other, so we'll add that as a condition if we have a motion at some point. Do we have a motion?
Is there any point in making any suggestion or recommendation for a minor redesign of that front, since it seems to be of concern to a few of the commissioners?
So if I could interject a little bit, Jerry and I independently both looked at all the houses on that street and we came away with very different impressions, because my impression was 8 out of the 10 houses south of that property have the same front facade. So it's at the setback line. It's mostly garage. And then it's either house with a hidden courtyard, or it's fenced to be kind of the courtyard entry to the house, which is not visible from the street. My impression, and I think whether you like or don't like the rendering of this house is personal, but my impression is it's prominent enough to make you think, if you can't find the front door, I bet it's in there. And you won't feel like you're going over someone's side yard fence and sneaking around the back. It looks prominent. It looks like a gateway. It looks like you're supposed to go that way.
Yeah.
To find
it. Nancy, I'm sorry. I don't mean to interject. Breaking up to me. I agree. You know, my interpretation driving up and down the street, that past the point of the garages, which are pretty massive on most of the houses, the height of the front facade drops down to fence height. Even in the Jim Mall house there, where he's known to run things high, it still drops down to about 6-7.5 feet, you know, as far as a high fence line. And then the rest of the houses are stepped back at least by 2 or 3 feet past the garage facade. But, you know, it seems like we've got pretty much I'm 3 okay with it, are opposed to it, so I'm not going to push the point. I just thought that it was a poor. I like the design overall. I just thought that was a poor handling of that front facade, and I thought it was overly massive, and we didn't get the articulation that we were hoping for. So I won't push the point on this, but you know, seems we have. We kind of have a split commission on that. So
if I can kind of, I don't know that I'd be ready to disapprove because of that facade. I just didn't dig it. But that doesn't mean it, that I wouldn't approve it, but you know, I don't have to like everything.
I just want to interject that I think if you look at the elevations, it's really hard to not agree with what Jerry's saying. I'm putting the weight of my judgment of, tending to agree with Nancy's assessment of the intimacy of the facades of the community, along with the rendering that's in Exhibit B, which is the one that shows the 3/4 view in the entrance with the garage side open, and the transparency of the fencing along with that, I think, is what sways me. I would not be for it if that fencing was solid. I would completely agree. But I think the opening, the transparency of the fencing is something I can work with on this one.
Okay.
All right. Well, I think we've talked and talked. Do we have any more discussion, or would somebody like to entertain a motion?
Let's see if I can find it. Is it on the first part of the staff report here, Nancy? I'll move we approve Planning Commission Resolution 7-20, including findings and conditions of approval for the project as depicted on the site development plan submitted to the city on December 17th, 2019, with the additional condition of no further construction beyond the west property line into the open space.
I will second that motion.
Yeah, with the discussion that would be at-grade patios also, correct?
Including at-grade patios.
Okay.
Any construction.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to accept the applicant's proposal with the conditions attached of not extending past the property line. Nancy, would you concur that we have a solid motion?
Yes.
Okay, can we get a roll call, please?
Commissioner Lucas?
Yes.
Commissioner Stewart?
Yes.
Commissioner Barone?
Yes.
Commissioner Ingrafia?
Yes.
Chair Lohr?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, motion passes 5-0. All right. Let me get scroll down to. All right, Jerry, I forget what to do next. So why don't I hand this thing off to you?
Okay, am I coming through clear? I'm still getting a little glitchiness on my end. So let me know if it doesn't work. So next item is be new business, and I see none. An item after that, item D, would be unfinished business, and I see none. So then we have planning commissioner comments and future agenda items, and I'll start with the Scott. You released the housing element. I haven't had a chance to go into depth on it or to review it. Where are we with that? When is it going to be coming before us? Or
we're a couple of meetings out from bringing it to you for the first time. We wanted to release it, give you a good soak with it, so you could take a look at it. We'd also be happy to myself and Nancy are the ones working on it. So also be happy to, you know, take individual questions from you while you're reviewing it up front. Don't send them out to the group, please. I think we're a minimum 30 days out. We're going to be sending it to HCD to get their comments in a couple of weeks. We're probably looking maybe the second meeting in May to bring it before you. Sort of depends on whether we have the vacation rental ordinance ready for you. I don't want to torture you, so I'll just bring one or the other to you, not both. And my take is the housing element, we'll present it to you. We fully expect that it might take a couple of meetings to get through it. It's not particularly long, but it does pick up all of the changes in state law that have taken place over the last several years. We go from a 5-year cycle to an 8-year cycle. So some changes to it. We have a fairly significant number of units, housing units that we need to, get to over that time frame. So that's kind of where we're at with it.
Scott, I wanted to ask a question. I saw SLOCOG had come out with the larger housing element that had some things about targets for individual jurisdictions. Does this pull that information in?
It does. It's the RENA numbers that they're established through SLOCOG, and then they're pushed out into our housing elements for the individual for the 7 cities and the county. So those numbers go into that, 10,000 something total units. which is up from, I think, 4,000 in the previous housing element cycle.
And then, Scott, with these interesting times we're living in, could you give a quick explanation of how the Community Development Centers is handling permits and projects that come forward and stuff?
That's a great question. We are and have been open. We have limited hours. Under the previous order from the county, we were following along with that, and we were working on residential projects and any commercial projects that were underway. Currently, we take applications for planning and building on Mondays, Wednesdays and Thursdays from 8 to noon. We have a drop box outside the community development department where you can drop plans off. You make an arrangement with the permit technician, and so we get the plans into you, we get your fees to you, that kind of thing. So we've been taking applications in. We're doing inspections. We've been doing inspections the whole time. Right now, the county issued revised orders that all construction is going to be out there. We were not issuing permits for new commercial. We have a couple of projects that are waiting to get their permits for TIs. That's tenant improvements. And so we'll be releasing those based on the new order, updated order from the county. We're going to have a conversation tomorrow about expanding our hours back open to maybe be 5 days a week. Probably still be limited, limited to mornings probably to start with, and then we'll kind of ramp it up from there.
Okay. Any other comments, Jesse?
Sorry, guys.
I want to thank you guys, Scott, everybody at the city, for all the hard work you guys have been doing and hanging in there and doing the work that needs to be done. So I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Jesse.
One more thing, and I don't know if this is quite appropriate, but I'm going to say it anyway, and we'll see what happens. I was allowed to get a COVID test today at the urgent care. Took about 5 minutes, maybe 10. It was very unpleasant, but got through it, and I live to tell the tale, so I won't announce my results, but just want to let everybody know that testing is available. It didn't seem to be you needed any kind of reason to go in there. Just if we're going to open back up, I think we should all be responsible. And this goes to public wide. Go out there and get tested and make sure we're not contaminating anybody. So,
right, Susan.
I don't know if this is something that would need to go on the agenda or how other people feel about it, but it's very much a drop in the bucket, but I would willingly forego the little stipend that commissioners get, and whether that would be something we would all vote on to do. I don't know if that would be a future agenda item or not.
Yeah, you certainly could make that decision, and we can convey that, to the council and to our human resources folks.
Okay. So do I see any other hands go up on that?
And we do that without an agenda item, Scott?
Well, you can tell me you want to do it now, and I'll check back in if we have to put it on the next agenda or not. I can ask.
Okay. It would be well worth it not to have to fill out those 700 forms.
Looks like Jerry froze.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, he sure did. Okay. Well, I'll jump back in. I would be willing to forego. I think it looks like Joe and Mike. Michael and Susan all agreed, obviously, and because Susan brought it up, and then Jerry, I didn't get a solid answer on, but
yeah, I'm all for it. Can you guys hear me at this point?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, now you're freezing.
Okay. Am I back?
I tell you what, on that front, I think if you just, if you all wouldn't mind sending me an email to that effect, I think that's probably all you need to do.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
I have one question for Scott. With respect to that email about that cell phone installation from several years back and readings, any new developments on that?
No. I think referring to the email regarding the wireless facility at the Comfort Inn?
Yeah.
No, I mean, there's, you know, what the city doesn't have any authority as it relates to it. Okay, we're completely preempted from weighing in on radio frequency, period. You know, and that's the information I've met with folks over there. I've talked with them. I've had numerous emails with them. You know, I think there was some misunderstanding there, or I don't know, I think maybe wishful thinking, maybe from at least a couple of people, that we would be able to do more than we could. And, you know, I rolled the city attorney's office into this. They have specialists they have attorneys that specialize in wireless facilities and wireless regulations. They reiterated that we don't have a, you know, horse in the race. You know, we can't weigh in on RF emissions. I did contact the, AT&T, and they did come out and have the readings redone, and they were found to be well below FCC thresholds, whatever that means. Also, some of the folks that live over there had handheld meters. You know, I mean, the meters that the guy went out there, you know, from the consulting firm, I walked the area with him, he had like $10,000 meter, and the ones that the, you know, folks live over there a couple of $100, but the readings they were coming up with were well below FCC, you know, requirements as well, regulations. In fact, we're coming in at, like, you know, most of the time less than a couple of percent of the FCC regulations, which is normally what you see as it relates to these, you know, towers. Now, I'm not going to speak to safety or lack thereof for the FCC requirements. I'm just saying that's what they measured. We're really within less than a percent. Total of the maximum allowed, really low readings compared to what, again, can be out there.
Oh, that's right. That is my question. I just wanted to know if they determined that they were still within FCC.
Very much so.
Okay. Any other, Michael?
Yeah, I just had a question, Scott. I'm noticing in my extensive walking that I'm doing these days, there's actually quite a number of RVs that are now hooked up to homes, and some of them are in driveways, but some of them are in the streetscape. And I'm talking about situations where they've been in that condition for over a week now. And I'm not concerned myself, but I was wondering what's the city position on RVs in the public right-of-way hooked up as if they're being lived in?
Well, they can't be. You can't live in an RV. You can have it hooked up at your house to charge the battery and things like that. I mean, that's not an issue, but you can't be using it for habitation. It's prohibited by our municipal code. We know addresses or locations. We would have code enforcement go out there and take a look at it and make contact with the owners and let them know they can't do that. If they're in the right of way, there's a 72-hour limitation related to parking anything. So
I'm not trying to be a tattletale. I just know that sometimes when people have an instance where something comes up, it becomes an issue for a neighbor. I'm not having any concerns about what I see, but if the people near some of these instances would see it, it's not like seeing the occasional person on Spencer's for a couple of days or something like that. These are trailers that are set up with their levelers and having electric lines out into the street on some of these.
I'm actually shocked that we haven't gotten complaints.
Well, it could be that people are sensitive. It could be people's students coming home and no place to stay. And so they borrowed the uncle's RV and they're staying in it. I don't know.
Yeah, could be the case.
Yeah. Susan?
I was just going to say it could also be the case that if somebody is, say, working in healthcare right now and coming home and not wanting to contaminate their families, there's certainly in larger metropolitan areas, there are situations where people are having to house themselves separate from their families, and that might be a way that they're doing it. So it'd be worth asking the question. You know, it may still not be right or legal, but it may at this time period be something that people are doing for health and safety?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. We have most of our hotels are shut down, but a few of them have folks staying at them. And a lot of times they're health workers that are staying away from their families, or they've come into the area to assist or what have you. There's any number of scenarios like that, or they're here to assist family members and that type of thing. So that is not an uncommon thing. In fact, we had a complaint on a vacation rental today that we were looking at that was the case, that they had folks were staying at the vacation rental to take care of family members that were in town.
And then that brings up the question, Scott, as far as the state programs and stuff to house homeless in empty motels. Is any of that going on here?
I don't believe that we have. So they identified, I think, four in various communities. One was in Morro Bay, but I don't believe that they activated it.
Okay, Jesse.
I'm sorry. One last question, and only because I spend too much time on Nextdoor. The fish thing. Are we gonna be having fish sold off the docks? And are there regulations, or are we gonna be hearing more about that?
Yeah, that's correct. I think we released a press release today. You probably find it on the city's website. I looked earlier, I didn't see it, but it's probably on there now. That really implements the county's change in order. And so, up to I think yesterday, recreational fishing, launching boats at the boat ramp was prohibited. Because we were having problems. You see, we were seeing boats go out with a lot of folks on them that weren't related. So we ended up shutting it down, like many of the other boat launch facilities on the coast. But now that's recreational fishing is allowed again. And so we're opening that back up. And so the boat launch ramp will be open for everybody to use now. And I think we were running down whether there is some limitations for, say, like the party boats going out to have only 10 people on them. I know I saw some information related to verges, and they were only going to have 10 people on their boat and have them maintaining, social distancing on the boat. So at least they were, implementing that sort of distancing. And we were looking into what the requirement was this afternoon. I didn't see an email that came back. We had gotten a response on it yet, but maybe we have since we've been planning commission meeting. So.
And I think there was also, we had an ordinance allowing, on boat fish sales, for the harbor too. So I think, with the new seasons coming in, especially salmon season, I think is opening up May 1st or something.
Yeah, May 1st. Mm-hmm.
So there may be some potential to support the local fishermen.
Yeah, we already allowed that. That's a good point.
Yeah. Okay, Scott, is there anything that you'd like to add if we don't have any other comments from the commissioners?
I'll let you know that the next meeting is going to run a little bit differently. We're not going to have the call-in component. We're going to be still using Zoom. Everybody will be able to hop on the Zoom. It'll be a Zoom webinar type thing. And it'll be operated a little bit differently. I would imagine I'll be the one that's promoting folks up to talk when it's applicants or the public. We went through a little bit of a training today. Hopefully we'll see how that goes. The first attempt at doing this will be next Tuesday, city council meeting. So thankfully they didn't guinea pig you after the 45 minutes of training I had this afternoon. I think we had enough issues. We'll see how that goes. And so it'll be a little bit different format, and hopefully it'll be smoother. I think one of the issues is, the phone call-in system is online as well as Zoom's online. And I think, there's bandwidth limitations. So that's part of the issues that we were having. That and everybody's required to be at home. So after everybody, eats dinner, they sit down in front and, in front of the TV, turn Netflix on, and there's no, all the bandwidth goes way down, right, for everybody. So I think there's those two couple of things going on. So we're hoping that'll help the meetings and stop people from getting dropped on calls and that type of thing. That's the next phase of what we're doing to try to improve that situation, because it didn't go very – we had problems at the last council meeting, and then obviously we had a little bit of that even today with planning commission meeting. So we're looking to improve things and make things better. So bear with us, please.
So, on my screen, I have another phone
call-in item. So is there anybody that was trying to get through?
No, sir. That is the Zoom call-in. So we are just monitoring that call. There is nobody in the queue.
Okay. Okay. Thanks. Thanks, Bob. All right. I want to apologize to the commission for my lack of bandwidth here. It, you know, I have a hard time getting Netflix at this time of night also. So, so my apologies for that. And thanks, Jesse, for covering for me. And, is it one last chance for anybody to have anything that they'd like to contribute? Okay. So, at this point, we'll adjourn to the next regularly scheduled Planning Commission meeting on May 5th, 2020 at 6 p.m. Via teleconference, and we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. So, all right.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Good night. Good night, and stay safe.